Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Well, I hope you all had a great week. I was going to feature the second part of James E. Frey's Lost Words series, but I got super swamped in my day job and had no time to edit it into the show. We should be picking it up again next week, and I do apologize. In his place, I do have another piece which is very good, and we can get to that right now. The piece is called Let's Go Out and Sell Freemasonry, by author unknown. Now, if the title does not get your attention, I do not know what will. Freemasonry should be sold with all the expertise and all of the ability which we can bring to the sales effort. If you keep reading after those first two sentences, you're the man I'm looking for. I am not advocating that we should go out and sell Freemasonry to the general public. I certainly am not proposing that we continue the insipid newspaper advertisement which I see far too many times in my own state. I don't think that many of the brochures and television spots supposedly informing the public of what Freemasonry really is help us. Not at all. What I suggest is that we sell Freemasonry to the people who really need to be sold on Freemasonry. Let's sell Freemasonry to those who have been Freemasons for some 30 or 40 years and have never bothered to learn about the fraternity. In Missouri, we used to call the Button Masons. A friend of mine, who shall be nameless, as it might hurt him professionally, states, "How do you know yourself to be a Mason?" And he answers with, "By all the pot metal pins which I wear on my lapel." We don't really need advertising. We don't need so much press agentry. What we need to do is sell Freemasonry to our own members. With some 3 million salesmen out working for the fraternity, we could be a working organization once again. We need to sell Masonry to our members, and we need to educate those members. Before someone comes up with a brilliant statement that his particular lodge has the entire membership already sold on Freemasonry, let me ask a few questions. How many lodges in the United States can state that 10% of their membership attend on a regular basis? How many members does your lodge have that haven't attended since they took their third degree? How dedicated can some person be who joins an order and never takes the slightest interest in the workings of that order? Am I proposing that all members become active in the ritualistic work of a lodge? No, I am not. I am proposing that he can intelligently discuss Freemasonry with anyone who might ask him about the order. I would think that we should not only educate and inspire our membership about Freemasonry, but that we should continue to communicate with our entire membership and see that this membership is kept informed about current developments within the fraternity. A man who knows nothing about the orders to which he belongs is a man who, through ignorance and apathy, casts a negative rather than a positive vote toward that survival of Freemasonry. I'm going to take a few minutes to mention our apps, which are available for Apple and Android platforms. These let you listen streaming and give you access to bonus features of the show like papers that we read and Masonically themed wallpapers for your mobile device. And a portion of the money that we get from the sale goes into hosting our audio files. Alternatively, if you would like streaming access to the show but would like to do it for free, there is our Stitcher Smart Radio app. Just register using the promo code WhenceCameYou with no spaces, then search for our show. This lets Stitcher know that you came to our app in order to hear us. They in turn send us a dollar to help support the show. If apps aren't your thing, we do have a donation button on the website, which is secure through PayPal. Just visit wcypodcast.com and look for the link on the right-hand side. It's been a super busy week between writing for the Midnight Freemasons, setting up articles to go live, and recording for a couple other podcasts. I have to apologize for not being as present this last week in our social media outlets. I did start an Instagram account for the show, primarily just to post neat Masonic-themed pictures, and you can find that at hashtag WhenceCameYou. But remember, we're on everything, and you can find the links to all of them on our website at wcypodcast.com. Under podcast news, episode 3 of Far From Center just came out last week, and if you had a listen, you'll hear me there doing a famous Freemason segment. Again, I would not be a part of something I didn't enjoy and find the content entertaining, and that's what this is. A former Green Beret and now author and podcaster, Robert Lewis is also a brother. I think he speaks to brothers and has an even more pull, if you will, within brothers who served in the armed forces. So have a listen when you get a chance. The other podcast, again, details are still being hammered out, and I'll talk about it when I get the chance. Now, this last week was St. Patrick's Day, and I think I posted something about it, and Brother Stephen had asked me about the Knight Masons. So I figured, let's shed some light on the Knight Masons, which has its base in Dublin, Ireland. If you visit the Knight Masons website for the United States, they have some information, including their mission statement, which is the following. The Grand Council of Knight Masons of the United States of America, in consideration of its origin, strives to 1. Perpetuate the ancient rituals of the Irish Masonic canon, the Green Degrees, by promoting their frequent and regular conferral in its constituent councils, and by its expectation that such conferral will be executed with an accuracy, a precision, and a dramatic power congruent with the highest traditions of the Masonic institution. 2. Elevate to membership in its constituent councils only those Freemasons who in their character and persons have amply and thoroughly demonstrated in their Masonic lives, by means of a faithful attachment to the institution, a true and honorable record of service to its goals, and a genuine dedication to its high ideals. 3. Foster in its constituent councils the regular exploration and study of Masonic tradition and heritage by means of an aggressive program of scholarly inquiry and research, and to pursue that Masonic learning in the spirit of our Celtic forebears who kept the light of faith burning in times of darkness. 4. Encourage its constituent councils to discover in the pleasures and diversions of the festive board that warm fellowship and that joyous fraternity which have ever characterized and actuated the great spirit of this ancient craft. 5. Promote the charitable dimension so central to and inherent in Masonic life and tradition by obliging its constituent councils to contribute with customary Masonic liberality to those institutions, both Masonic and non-Masonic, which serve the needs of the greater community. Now, it should be noted also that the Knight Masons is indeed an invitational and honorable body similar to the Allied Masonic degrees, but that's where the similarities end. The Order of Knight Masons is a secular, chivalric Masonic order open to invited Master Masons who are also members of a Mark Lodge, which is part of the York Rite, where you get a degree called the Mark Master and a Royal Arch Chapter. Members of the order meet in the Councils of Knight Masons, which are governed by the Grand Council of Knight Masons based in Dublin, Ireland. The Order of Knight Masons is a system of 3 degrees, namely Knight of the Sword, Knight of the East, and Knight of the East and West. Councils of Knight Masons are individually presided over by an excellent chief, and the degrees are conferred separately upon candidates. The degrees communicate the story of the efforts to build the Second Temple in Jerusalem. They complete the sequence of universal Masonic degrees that are conferred within the Irish system. Councils of Knight Masons are presided over by an excellent chief with 2 other senior officers, namely the Senior Knight and the Junior Knight. When meeting officially, Knight Masons are permitted to form Councils of Knight of the Sword, or Councils of Knight of the East, or Councils of Knights of the East and West, in order to confer those particular degrees. Therefore, the 3 degrees of Knight Masonry are conferred in 3 separate councils, all operating within a Council of Knight Masons. Again, there are 3 degrees conferred within the Order of Knight Masons, all concerning the return of the Jewish people from the Babylonian captivity. The central character in all of these degrees is Zerubbabel. The 3 degrees are Knight of the Sword, or Babylonian Pass, in which Zerubbabel seeks permission from King Cyrus to return to Jerusalem, Knight of the East, or Jordan Pass, which tells the story of Zerubbabel's return to Persia to seek the help of King Darius, and Knight of the East and West, or Royal Order, which represents the return of Zerubbabel to his countrymen in Jerusalem. Now, although I am not a part of this chapter of Masons, I can tell you from the information I'm providing to you all now, to me it sounds very much like the chivalric orders of the Knight Templar, which I did receive. As far as their history goes, there are degrees of this nature in appendant orders within various Masonic systems throughout the world. For example, the Allied Masonic degrees, America's York Rite, the Ancient and Accepted Scottish Rite, and others have degrees that bear a close similarity to the Irish Knight Mason degrees. In Ireland, the degrees were being conferred within Masonic Knight Templar preceptories until 1923, When compared to similar ceremonies, the Irish versions of these degrees are very elaborate and exceptionally detailed, and it was decided that they should be given their own governing body and to be allowed to practice independently of the Masonic Knight Templars. In 1923, within Freemasons Hall in Dublin, the first meeting of the Grand Council of Knight Masons took place, and the consecration of new councils to preserve the Knight Masons degree was planned. In the United States of America, Knight Masonry quickly flourished, and eventually some American councils formed a separate Grand Council of the USA. This Grand Council governs councils within the many states in the United States. However, access to American councils is strictly by invitation only within the York Rite. Today, the Order of Knight Masons under the Grand Council of Knight Masons can be found all over the world. Councils can be found across the globe in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and India. New councils continue to be founded, most recently in Bermuda, Greece, and England. Some additional information from the Grand website includes the following excerpt. By becoming a Knight Mason, one discovers a closer degree of intimacy and friendship. As there are a relatively small number of Knight Mason councils, members are encouraged to visit other councils where they will always be made welcome. The order has a charitable aspect in the Joseph Carmel Benevolent Fund, which was set up in 1957 when the great chief, Most Excellent Sir Knight Joseph H. Hamill, was very pleased to announce that he had received a check for £250 from the children of the late very excellent Joseph M. Carmel to be used for Masonic charity in memory of their father. The fund was to be devoted to the relief of Knight Masons requiring assistance. The first trustees of the fund were Thomas W. Damery, Alfred McAfee, George R. Morris, and the Great Chief. Well, Brother Stephen, I hope that answers some of your questions. I learned some things as well in this research. Definitely a neat appendant body, very heavy in the York Rite system, which is awesome. Now I want to quickly mention our affiliate, Onnit. Check out Onnit Labs through the link on our site, wcypodcast.com. for great fitness equipment and smart supplements, which are made from all natural stuff, no GMO, no caffeine, all organic. I use some of the stuff as well, and that's why I went with them, healthy living and all. If you go through our site and you want 10% off, use the coupon code WCY. That gets you 10% off, and a portion of your order goes back to the show to help pay the bills. Next is this week's famous Freemason, J.B. Millam. Jesse Bartley Millam, 1884 to 1949, was the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation from 1941 to 1949. J.B. Millam, as he was commonly known, was born on March 10, 1884, near Italy, Texas, to Sarah Ellen Couch Millam and William Ginn Millam. His mother's family had fled to the Cherokee Nation to Texas in 1863 as refugees from the fighting during the American Civil War. His father's family had immigrated to Texas from Alabama. He was a Cherokee through his mother. Millam was a member of the Long Hair Clan. In 1887, his family returned to Cherokee Nation lands in northeastern Indian Territory and settled near Chelsea, Oklahoma. In 1922, Millam privately funded Emmett Starr's research of Cherokee genealogy and history, which resulted in the 1917 publication of Starr's Early History of the Cherokees. Millam, an avid bibliophile, amassed a collection of over 1,600 volumes about Cherokee and Native American history and culture. Inspired by the inventor Cherokee Salaberry Sequoyah and his quest to unite Cherokee factions, J.B. Millam funded an expedition to Mexico to find Sequoyah's gravesite. Cherokee and non-Cherokee scholars drove from Oklahoma to Eagles Pass, Texas in January of 1939. They discovered what they believed to be his grave near a spring in the Mexican state of Coahuila. However, they could not conclusively prove the grave belonged to Sequoyah. During Millam's tenure as principal chief, chiefs were appointed by the U.S. president, but this situation was unsatisfactory to Cherokee citizens. On August 8, 1938, in Fairfield, Oklahoma, a grassroots national council of Cherokees gathered to choose their own chief. They elected J.B. Millam. On April 16, 1941, Franklin D. Roosevelt confirmed J.B. Millam's appointment as chief. Roosevelt and later Harry S. Truman reconfirmed his appointment in 1942, 1943, and in 1947. Millam served as chief until his death. Millam helped create several Cherokee language classes and was instrumental in creating the Cherokee National Historical Society. He started negotiations for the tribe to purchase the site of the original Cherokee National Females Seminary. the tribal college in Park Hill, Oklahoma, that had burned down in 1887. Milam died on May 8, 1949 from heart disease and is buried in Chelsea Cemetery. His daughter Mildred Elizabeth Milam Viles was active in Cherokee community development, particularly in Cookson, Oklahoma. She maintained and expanded upon J.B. Milam's research library. Her son, J.B. Milam's grandson, Philip Hubbard Viles, served as Chief Justice of the Cherokee Nation for two decades. J.B. Milam's papers are archived at the McFarland Library at the University of Tulsa. Many of his personal effects and items connected to his membership to the Freemasons and Shriners are in the collections of the Cherokee Heritage Center. Principal Chief Ross Swimmer writes of Milam, "His story is in large part of the internal history of the Cherokee Nation as it continued to function and grow despite the policy of the government in Washington. Milam's life is a touchstone for the history of Indian-white relations. I could not find out his home lodge in either the Scottish Rite system or Blue Lodge, but it is widely reported that he was of the 32nd degree in the Scottish Rite." That's it for this week. Check us out on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. We're also on Tumblr, Pinterest, MySpace, Instagram, and Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. Check out all of the content on our website at www.wcypodcast.com. And keep checking out the Midnight Freemasons for great content three times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays by great writers. Don't forget about the Far From Centered podcast with our brother Robert Lewis. And with that, I'll talk to you all next week when James E. Frey returns with the second installment of his Lost World series. For Whence Came You? I'm Robert Johnson.